Welcome to China Focus. I'm Jim Stevenson, along with Sarah Williams.
The U.S. National Security Advisor visits Beijing for talks with Chinese officials.
The wife of a prominent Chinese human rights lawyer calls for his release to the United States.
Pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong shave their heads.
Our roundtable looks at Chinese real estate purchases abroad.
And Harvard University gets its single largest donation from a Hong Kong foundation. Hello and welcome to China Focus.
Let's look at some of the biggest news stories this week.
U.S. National Security Advisor Susan Rice paid a three-day trip to Beijing, where she called for expanding military cooperation to reduce tensions. The visit follows last month's altercation between a U.S. military aircraft and a Chinese fighter jet over the South China Sea. Shannon Van Sant reports from the Chinese capital.
The Pentagon accused the Chinese pilot of acting unprofessionally and aggressively by making several threatening passes of the American surveillance aircraft coming within 9 meters of the plane. On Tuesday, China's foreign ministry spokesperson Hua Chunying commented on Rice's visit. Hua said China and the United States have a high degree of consensus on development of military-to-military relations and are engaged in active dialogue to avoid further miscalculations. Over the past year, China has displayed increasing willingness to assert its claims over territory in the East and South China Seas. Authorities temporarily sent a mobile drilling platform to waters contested by Vietnam. Chinese workers are carrying out land reclamation efforts on reefs claimed by the Philippines. And Beijing has established a new air defense identification zone that overlaps with ones created by Japan and South Korea. While those actions have raised tensions with China's neighbors and with Washington, many see scheduled talks between U.S. President Barack Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping in November as a chance to improve relations. Rice's trip is aimed at laying the groundwork for that visit. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
Among the issues confronting the United States and China are Washington's deep concerns over Beijing's human rights situation. There are a number of prominent cases, including that of activist Guo Fiosheng.
On Friday, his trial in Guangzhou was postponed because his lawyers boycotted the session.
In addition, Uyghur scholar Ilham Tohti reportedly appeared in an Urumqi court last Sunday. He has been charged with separatism, a charge he denies.
One of the most significant cases involves human rights lawyer Gao Shisheng, who was released from prison last month. He is in very poor physical and mental shape following 5 years of imprisonment in solitary confinement. His wife, Gung He, who lives in the U.S. with their two children, told a Washington news conference on Tuesday that Gao has terrible dental problems and can only eat baby food. He is being cared for by relatives who are regularly visited and monitored by security officials. Gao has also lost some of his ability to communicate.
Gung described her husband's physical condition.
Gao Shisheng is now in a very alarmingly poor health, severely lack of nutrition, low in blood sugar, and with a small bump on the gallbladder, particularly after staying in the dark cell alone for 5 years, he has lost part of his language skills. According to my sister, he needs 2 to 3 years of traditional Chinese medicine treatment, and his language skills may be recovered in a year.
Gao's international lawyer, Jared Genser, told the news conference U.S. authorities at the highest level should work with the Chinese government to allow Gao to be sent to the United States. He called on U.S. President Barack Obama to raise Gao's status with Chinese President Xi Jinping during their forthcoming meetings.
We would urge the White House, the State Department, President Obama, Secretary Kerry, to publicly raise Gao Zhisheng's case and to privately advocate for his freedom as a deliverable prior to the summit taking place in early November. Without the direct intervention of the President of the United States and the Secretary of State, I fear that the situation will remain the same for Gao Zhisheng. It is only by the United States prioritizing his release that we will see Gao reunited with his family in the near future.
Sophie Richardson, China Director of Human Rights Watch, said Gao's case demonstrates Beijing's crackdown on dissent.
We believe that it's imperative that senior Chinese government officials be made to understand that they will have to answer for the treatment of people like Gao in all settings, whether they're in Washington or Beijing, whether they're in New York or in Geneva. It is this kind of pressure we believe will prompt a different reaction from Beijing.
In 2001, Gao was named one of China's best lawyers by the Chinese Ministry of Justice.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, your next watch may tell you more than just the time.
With the sounds of electric clippers mixing with a cello playing Beethoven's Ode to Joy, Hong Kong pro-democracy activists have shaved their heads to protest China's new election rules for the former British colony.
The leaders of the territory's Occupy Central movement, which has vowed to stage mass rallies in the territory's central business district soon, led about 40 supporters in cutting off their hair Tuesday.
Occupy co-founder Benny Tai said the symbolic protest is meant to show their commitment to the cause.
He said, from the very beginning, we said that our Occupy actions mean to signal the world how determined we are. We occupy some important streets in order to be arrested by police to express we are not afraid of sacrifice and willing to give up our freedom to fight for the democratic universal suffrage.
Former Civic Party legislator Tanya Chan was one of the few women to participate in the head shaving.
She said, people joke with me, asking me if I shaved my hair because I'm still unmarried or because there's no real universal suffrage. The answer is simple. Since sham marriages are illegal, how can we accept a fake election?
The protest Tuesday was marred by a brief scuffle between pro-democracy supporters and pro-Beijing activists. Reuters reports one demonstrator was taken to the hospital following the altercation.
Last week, China ruled that prospective candidates for Hong Kong chief executive first be approved by a nominating committee that is likely to be stacked by pro-Beijing representatives.
On Monday, China announced a record-high trade surplus of nearly $50 billion in August, as exports surged and imports fell, a sign that domestic demand is sluggish. Falling prices and demand in the real estate sector, coupled with a drop in the credit supply, could force policymakers to offer more stimulus if they want to achieve their target of 7.5% growth this year.
IHS chief economic analyst Rajiv Biswas says China's improving exports can be attributed in part to improving economic performance in the Eurozone and the United States.
Meanwhile, IHS predicts China's economy will become the world's largest in 2024, with consumer spending almost quadrupling over the next decade, growing at 7.7% annually in real terms.
This week marked the 13th anniversary of the September 11th, 2001 terror attacks against the United States. China is dealing with its own terror crisis following several deadly incidents.
Kunming is the capital of Yunnan province, and the Chinese government blamed the attack on Uyghur militants. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide, traveling in Yunnan, tells me how the region is coping with the terror threat.
One of the main things that we were trying to look at in Kunming at the start of the trip, we're trying to get a sense of how Kunming is coping in the wake of this brutal attack that occurred in early March. And that China has branded a terrorist attack, that said that overseas organizations were at least involved or influencing the attack. It was one of the most violent attacks that we had seen in China. Some had even called it China's 9/11. And so we're trying to get a sense of, you know, how, on the one hand, the Muslim community is responding to this and also the community as a whole, because Yunnan is a very diverse province, more than 20 minority groups here, and it has a different feel to it than other cities in China just because of the diversity that exists there. But in the wake of the attack, we're trying to gauge, you know, how people are feeling and responding to that incident.
Were you able to visit any public transportation centers like train stations or look at the buses about how security is in those areas after that attack?
You really don't have to go very far in Kunming to see the impact. We visited a large square, shopping area, and there were police everywhere. in the square, there were police patrolling. And then off to the side, there was an ambulance just standing by, just in case anything happened. There were soldiers patrolling the streets as well. And pretty much anywhere where there's transportation, especially the bigger places like the train station where the incident occurred and other areas, you do see a very strong police presence.
VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide.
What time is it?
U.S. technology giant Apple this week unveiled new products, including its smartwatch, called, of course, the Apple Watch, which combines health and fitness monitoring and mobile capabilities like maps. Other companies, including Sony, Samsung, and LG Electronics, have already launched their own versions of smartwatches.
The new phones, which will be faster and have longer battery life, will support more than 200 telecom carriers worldwide, including all three in China: China Mobile, China Unicom, and China Telecom. They're already taking pre-orders, which begin officially Friday.
Analysts quoted by the state-run news agency Xinhua say the new Apple phones will sell well in China, Apple's second-largest market.
Eric Harwit, professor of Asian Studies at Hawaii's East-West Center, who monitors the Chinese technology sector, told VOA's Victor Beatty the Chinese are always eager to see new Apple products.
It's really a status symbol for a lot of Chinese consumers to have an iPhone. Even though the Chinese themselves, the manufacturers, have started to make very competitive smartphones, the Chinese middle class who do have money now will be eager to line up to buy them at the Apple stores.
Will this run into any problems in China with regard to Chinese competition or even competition from big makers like Samsung?
Some of the Chinese companies, like one called the Xiaomi, has taken away some of the market share from those big makers like Samsung as well as from Apple. So I think this might be a way for Apple to start to get a little bit more of the market share that they've lost in the last year or so. Apple products tend to be more expensive than those made by Chinese manufacturers or even by the South Koreans. So they really have to keep offering cutting-edge items that the new rich in China are going to want to buy. So I think this will help Apple in China. Whether they can compete against the lower-priced Chinese-made products, that's another question, I think, for the larger market.
Apple hopes to eventually open 25 stores in mainland China. The People's Daily says the company has 12 stores as of August. China boasts 632 million internet users, with 527 million of those using mobile devices.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Harvard gets a sizable donation.
Chinese who can afford it are buying homes outside their country, often in the United States, Australia, and New Zealand. In our roundtable segment, we explore this phenomenon and how it affects those countries. Joining us are Joanne Fan, venture capitalist and visiting fellow at the Center for East Asia Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution, and Tom Watkins, president and CEO of the Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority, who has a strong interest in China.
We begin the discussion by asking our panelists why these international real estate markets are popular with Chinese investors.
Overseas investment is not a foreign idea to the Chinese people, especially since China has been experiencing double-digit growth in the past three decades, and a lot of wealth has been created. So the catalyst is actually the recent government's relaxation in overseas investment restriction, the so-called Go Global policy, and real estate is one option that's allowed. Having said that, there are monies to spare as well. To start out with, China has 3.5 trillion foreign exchange reserve U.S. dollars, and its state-owned enterprises' overseas expansion has been extraordinary. Not to mention there are quite a bit of number of high net worth individuals and self-made entrepreneurs with very deep pocketbooks. And for example, China is reported to have the second highest number of billionaires in the world after the U.S. Together, they have combined net worth of over U.S. dollars, $384 billion. That's a lot of money to spare. The economic factors in play here is that their increasing interest is because of the higher overseas yields, better return, that is. Chinese developers and investors no longer get the same returns in their home market, especially since they are trying to curtail the growing property bubble. For example, the return for Shanghai and Shenzhen stock exchanges is around 8 to 25% less than 3 years ago versus the real estate stock index, which rose 8.5% during the same period. There is not enough domestic investment channels, so they diversify assets by moving money offshore with more secure asset rights. Also, the higher restrictions on the domestic property right market to curtail the market and deflate the bubble propel them to move their money overseas. Most importantly, they feel that the overseas property prices are cheaper, and the renminbi appreciation actually versus the weaker foreign currency value also contribute to lower cost base for them.
If I can just add to that, I think it was an extremely comprehensive overview of the issue. The other is, I think, to point out is China's economy has been the world's largest economy, 18 of the past 20th centuries. It'll surpass the United States sometime in the next few years if it hasn't already. Also, we have here in my state and across America and in the West is everything that the Chinese need and want, whether that's clean air, clean water, golf, pristine environment, low cost. The Chinese have learned long ago the principle of buy low and sell high. It's not unusual for a Chinese person in Shanghai to pay over $1 million for a home, an apartment in Pudong, Shanghai. And yet here in Detroit, Chinese investors just purchased a 13-story building for $10 million. On an international border in Detroit and Windsor, Canada. So there's a tremendous amount of opportunities. But it's not just real estate. We're seeing here in Detroit, the place that put the world on wheels, with Chinese emerging auto market, we're seeing a tremendous amount of investment from the Chinese auto companies, like Japanese, German, Korean car companies that came to this country. Now we're seeing the Chinese auto market come in here. And what I expect is that we'll start with the suppliers, but ultimately we will see BYD or Geely or another Chinese brand that will be selling cars here in the West. And so there'll be a continual investment not only in real estate for homes, but also in commercial manufacturing and other real estate ventures.
Well, Mr. Watkins, being based in Detroit, you've seen that city go through a lot of changes over the years, a place where, at least currently, Americans are reluctant to buy into, and a lot of vast areas of Detroit that are uninhabited at the moment. But it seems like it's almost the perfect storm for Chinese investors, especially when you're talking about their interest in getting into the car market, number one, and number two, you have very low real estate available to them.
Absolutely. The other one we have here is there's over 15,000 Mandarin-speaking engineers here in the Detroit metropolitan area. The city of Detroit is a large area. You could drop Washington, D.C., Boston, San Francisco, and Chicago into the Detroit borders and still have tremendous amount of green space left. It's a large area. We have a shoreline that is unsurpassed. 20% of the world's fresh water surrounds the Great Lakes state of Michigan. So there's a lot for international investors. The other thing that we have here that is bodes very well is we have a self-described most immigrant-friendly governor in America, and Governor Rick Snyder, who has made it a point. Previous governors treated China like a Peking duck, constantly ducking, not going for political reasons. This governor, in his first 3 years in office, has made it a point to reach out overseas. And the strategy is to sell our goods and services into the Chinese market and to encourage foreign direct investment into the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan.
Ms. Fan, I wanted to ask you, certainly I've read that New York City is seen as very attractive for Chinese in terms of real estate purchases. Also, I've read that there are some very high-end places, well, not just in Manhattan, but also in Long Island, some very sizable mansions, you know, that those who can afford them are buying. What is the particular attraction of New York and its sort of greater New York area?
If I may, it appears that the Chinese investors are targeting core residential commercial assets in global gateway cities, and New York, obviously, as well as the European cities like London and others, are the prime target. And the U.S., being known as the land of the opportunity, does have its mental lore. According to the National Association of Realtors survey, Chinese buyers have made over $22 billion property purchase in the past rolling 12 months from March, and its growth is at 72% versus the average 35% growth from other foreign buyers during the same period. And Bloomberg has reported that Hong Kong is approximately 50% more expensive than Manhattan on a square foot basis. So as you can see, the Chinese investors consider U.S. property as a bargain, especially following the 2008 foreclosure prices versus Shanghai or Hong Kong. On the residential side, the median purchase price has been well over $520,000 per property. And on the commercial side, as you have noted, there have been some key higher profile commercial investments as well. But overall, office assets are the most popular targets for that particular area.
If I could add, the one thing, too, I think that's going to drive this even going forward is the Chinese are sending us more than cheap goods and services, and they're sending us their children. China now has surpassed India, is the largest country of sending their students to America to study. Michigan State University, a fine Tier 1 university, one-third of its freshman class the last few years have come from the People's Republic of China. And as their students come here to matriculate, their parents and relatives are coming to visit or to see them in graduation. And they're seeing a lot of what is oftentimes viewed as the flyover part of America. Chinese will come and will know New York City and Washington, D.C. and Orlando and Las Vegas and in L.A. and San Francisco. But just like in China, there's a lot between those two East and West Coast. And as the Chinese families come to visit their family members that are attending the universities, and in many cases at the high school level, they're seeing what it has to offer. And they're beginning to develop the American Guanxi, the relationships and the connections that they have that make it a little more appealing to reach out and to see some of that foreign area between the two coasts as an opportunity for not only their business investment, but also family investment. We're being very encouraging with the EB-5 visa in our state as an encouragement to have people immigrate to this country and invest in creating jobs and wealth here in our state.
I'd like to concur on the social perspective in terms of attraction. The prospects of a better life in the land of opportunity, better education, future prospects for the kids, potential immigration option, cleaner air, safer neighborhood, even the social status for the newly made entrepreneurs who have made it big, that had been a great attraction factors as well.
That's Joanne Fan, visiting fellow at the Center for East Asia Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution, and Tom Watkins, president and CEO of the Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority.
One of the world's top schools, Harvard University, here in the United States, has received its biggest donation ever, $350 million for its public health school.
That's quite a check, Sarah. The gift came Monday from the family foundation of real estate developers Gerald and Ronnie Chan of the Hong Kong-based Hang Lung Group.
Harvard said funds generated from investing the money will support students and faculty working to stop such pandemics as Ebola, malaria, cancer, and other diseases, and address global health threats from war, poverty, and environmental hazards.
Gerald Chan earned 2 degrees from the Harvard Public Health School in the 1970s. He recently has bought more than $100 million in real estate near the school located outside Boston, Massachusetts.
As part of the gift, Harvard said it would rename the public health school in honor of the Chan's father, T.H. Chan, a Hong Kong real estate developer who died in 1986. Harvard, founded in 1636, is the richest U.S. university with an endowment of more than $32 billion.
As always, we'd like to hear from you. You can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Also, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Sarah's handle at VOA Williams. I'm at VOA Stevenson. And check out our program page. It's at voanews.com/China Focus.
That's it for our show. I'm Sarah Williams.
And I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for listening to China Focus.